This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's a lovely day at Jikoji with cloud cover and some precipitation, much needed. It's lovely. Some of you may know that I'm a caregiver. My life's work is in being of service to others. My livelihood revolves around caring for adults with developmental disabilities. I work for a nonprofit organization. This vocation, this calling, has brought me fulfillment and joy for over 40 years. And I've had periods of burnout, heartache, and difficulty with anxiety. During the first year of the pandemic, I was administering the operations of two homes for persons with that were medically fragile. I won't go into the details of the staff and residents getting sick with COVID, being short-staffed, dealing with regulatory agencies and their safety protocols, as well as my company's protocols. There was a lot to keep the juggling balls in the air. Then during the second year of the pandemic, I was promoted to regional director. And for the next year, I was managing the administrators over 10 homes. That year was the most stressful year of my work life. I worked very many hours and gave so much of myself that year. Then in February, there was a reorganization in my company. Thankfully, I was given the opportunity to go back to a quality management position, which I am much better suited to. But in April, late April, due to the sudden death of a coworker, I was then asked to manage the two homes that he was in charge of. So once again, I became an administrator. So now I'm managing these two homes, which consist of 8 residents and about 20 staff. So in the last few minutes, I described different roles that I've had in my company in the last 14 years. And sure, I have certain skills, knowledge, and experience to handle these different roles. But as we know, everything changes. There's impermanence. And for me, I just roll with the changes. For the past 3 months, though, since transitioning away from being regional director, I have been in total burnout mode. Wiped out, checked out, unmotivated, uninspired. I wonder if you guys know what that feels like. Well, I was in this mode until 2 weeks ago. I got an email from a boss. The subject line was concern. Uh-oh. I thought, oh my gosh, what is going to go on now? Okay, I waited a couple seconds before opening it, and in it, my boss, fairly gently said that it was, she reminded me of my responsibility to my residents, my staff, my coworkers, and my company. Well, that snapped me to attention pretty much immediately. It was like cold water being poured over my head. I replied that I assuredly would be present and would do the best that I could, the best that I knew how. Since I sent that email, I am back to working with the spirit of service and caring once again with joy and fulfillment. Thinking about that period of, shall I call it a timeout? I was wrapped up in my burnt outness. I was consumed by it. I couldn't think of anything else. I was feeling tired and sorry for myself. But now, looking back, I'm aware that I was in my own way. Yes, in my own way. Even though I was practicing Zazen, facing the wall, during this low period, I was stuck. I lost sight of my mission, my purpose. I forgot about being grateful for the opportunity to care for people who need care. Is that selfishness? And maybe I'm being hard on myself. In the Genjo Koan, Dogen says, if a bird departs from the sky or a fish leaves the water, it immediately dies. We should know that for a fish, water is life, and for a bird, sky is life. A bird is life. Fish is life. Life is a bird. Life is a fish. And we should go beyond this. Okamura's comments to that are, we cannot live separately from this world. For us, this world is our life. Since we are one with the world and supported by all things as a part of the network of interdependent origination, we must take care of this world that includes both self and others. Life, or the natural universal life force, must be expressed as a bird or a fish or another individual being in order to manifest. Otherwise, life is just an abstract concept. Okamura continues, meaning is created in our lives when we find out our own place and path and begin to do something. Until that moment, there is no ready-made meaning or purpose to our lives. Of course, Dogen and Okamura are referring to practice realization, the middle way. And because everything comes forward as teaching, I cannot help but apply the Dharma to my everyday life. My living life as a caregiver is me expressing my life force, just as giving this talk is expressing my life force. I must give myself some latitude and forgiveness for being tired and burned out. I am, we are, after all, human. I invite comments or questions. Chuck.
Did you meditate before writing that email in return?
I did. I took some breaths. I thought about what I was going to say. I worded it carefully so that I could make sure that I wasn't telling an empty thing, you know, that it was something that I could actually do. But my attitude had changed already. Someone noticed. And my boss very kindly gently let me know. She noticed too. When you know, I put on a good face. And it, you know, and I told certain people that I was like not feeling like my usual joyful self. But it was hard. It was so hard. The work is so hard. So encompassing. Ben.
I was wondering if, since that time, have you changed anything to increase the support you can get, like community? I'm assuming you have your Zen community, or maybe at work, or how do you renew yourself?
Ben's asking how I renew myself. I did talk about it with people close to me. I did bring it up to some of my Dharma brothers and sisters. It didn't seem to help though. I'll tell you, if I was thinking about the way that I got the wake up call, and I think if Ruby, my boss, if she had called me on the phone and talked to me, I don't think it would have made a difference. I don't think it would have changed me. I don't think I would have got it that I was, you know, it wouldn't have got me out of the funk. The email was the right move because it gave me time to really look at it, something to look at again and again. Not just something going in one ear and out the other. Really was impactful to get me out. And now I've found joy again. in my work. It's beautiful. Because truly, I love what I do. I just think I was tired. I just needed a break. And my break was over. Anything from Zoom land? Cave.
Thank you, Judy, for sharing this. That's a true Dharma talk for me. It reminds me of the line in the Heart Sutra that says, those who lead all to liberation embody profound serenity. Thank you.
Todd.
Thank you for that. It threw me into my past a little bit because I used to work for Abilities United. So, do you know of this organization?
I do.
So, I'm curious if that is sort of a similar job situation for people disabled and handicapped.
It's somewhat similar. The homes that we run are a 24-hour operation. So even if it's the weekend or nighttime, I'm on call. It's me all the time. You know, I've gone through periods of, like I mentioned, I've been through periods of burnout throughout, you know, the 40 plus years that I've been doing this work. I mean, it's inevitable. You know, I mean, we all, maybe we've all experienced something like that, whether it be from your relationship, where you're in the, you know, something happens and you're in a funk about it, or you don't feel so good about your job, or, you know, I even thought of making a change. I really thought, you know, maybe I just need to quit and go somewhere else. You know, I was really trying hard to figure out how to get out. And my boss did me a great favor.
I wanted to talk a little bit off the side there from your experience, but more with this work,
yes,
which might have something to do with meaning, and if you maybe lose meaning, it can be burnout, I suppose. So I worked there for about 2 years. I was the maintenance carpenter guy, and no training. They just said, "Here, just fix these buildings," and so
wow.
But I was around those people.
Yeah.
And at first I was quite afraid because they would approach me and they would smell like urine and wanted to speak really like garbled. And then I started to watch the people that would take care of them. And they would bring them out from the homes or where they were into the public. And wander through like parks, and sometimes they go to a coffee shop, and people like myself, the public, didn't know how to approach this group. And some would come and, you know, want to directly connect. Others would just gaze and look and watch this.
Right.
So, you know, again, coming there, no training, no nothing, just fix buildings. I, like probably all of us, what is my meaning doing these? What am I doing? What am I supporting? So I came one day thinking I needed to know what I said, watching that, and I said, maybe it's empathy. So And then I started to become friends with one of the teachers, and she had cerebral palsy. And she would, but she was, I could tell, just sitting down to her, highly intelligent.
Yes.
And I started to, I asked her that. And she, I said, what is the role of these people in society? You know, how do they function? And she said, empathy. And I was like, wow. And I thought, why isn't she at the top of this hierarchy, being somebody who has this disability? And this organization was very top heavy, but no one there in the top heavy of administration had disability or handicap. They might have had relatives. So I'm just curious what what's the need? You said everybody needs, you know, people need, I need care.
Yes, we all need care.
And how does this group, this organization you work for, how does it, what is its benefit? How does you get meaning? You said it gives you great joy. So can you elaborate on
that? Yes. So I need to go back in order to answer Todd's question. When I was about 14, my parents bought some elder facilities, a couple of old folks' homes, and they were just in regular cul-de-sac in Cupertino. And part of the deal in getting these two homes was our family lived in the third home right next door. And so that was around 1974, 75, when the Governor Ronald Reagan was, he was endorsing, he was really helping people to leave the large institutions and live in regular homes. And so my parents were approached because they needed homes, people needed homes. And my parents said, yes, we'll take people with developmental disabilities, just as the elders aged out, you know, as they passed away or needed to go to hospital or a higher level of care. And so I was about 14 when I was introduced to working with people with developmental disabilities. And my parents ran a successful business for 25 years. My parents are remarkable, my mother especially. We had good food for them. We took them out on outings. They went to the, you know, they would, a lot of them were able to walk and handle money and go to the mall and, you know, shop and go out to eat and all that. But we provided the, you know, the other care, like taking care of their medications and making sure they had, you know, nice clothes, that they were bathed and clean, not smelly, that their rooms were clean and the house was warm, and, you know, just everything that you would expect in a home. And so that was my upbringing. And when I was 14 all the way through college, I was basically a volunteer. I would cook breakfast. I would take the residents out. I would take them, you know, I'd sit with them and watch TV, or we'd go for walks. So then once they retired, I was on my own for a while. I was a contractor. I was an administrator for other licensees, other people who owned care homes, and they didn't have the credentials to be their administrator. So they hired me and I would help them. And then there was then the whole wave of closing the developmental centers happened. The large institutions per legislation were closing. So the company that I work for, Elwyn, which started in Pennsylvania in the 1850s, came out and developed homes. And the first homes we opened were in 2008. I helped open those homes. I'm employee number 3. And now I'm the oldest employee because employee 1 and 2 are no longer there. So what we do, and the reason why I did consider changing jobs, but I really didn't want to because of the level of service and care and quality of care that we give all of our residents. Nobody smells like urine. Everybody is well cared for and as healthy as they can be. It is an honor to take care of these people that need our help. They go out in the community. They go to concerts and ball games. They go to everything that we go to, everything in life that we do. Their function in life is to try to be as normalized as possible, right? That's a term, normalization, right? So, you know, that's a term we use to approximate life. And I'm honored to do this work. I'm honored to have helped people open homes and provide, you know, really good care for people outside of institutions. Because most all of the institutions now, the large institutions, they're closed. Everybody lives in the community now. You could drive by a street and you wouldn't know that they live there. There's no signs. There's nothing that says, look at me, I have developmental disabilities, we live here. Nope. You may notice there are ramps, but other houses have ramps. Just a normal house. So that's, you know, does that answer your question at all or not really?
Well, I can see your sense of meaning, but I guess I wanted to go a little bit different or further in this aspect of us, of empathy, mm-hmm. and how we can, I probably use sympathy over empathy because I'm not handicapped. I mean, some people might think I am, but I'm not. Right. And so but what I saw happen is sort of like what I've learned from the Dalai Lama, who said about, because I had this issue with dogs, where they're all this, or horses, all this money, incredible amount of energy that horseback people have, and their dogs and cats and all this energy, and people. What happened to people? They don't want to deal with people. In fact, they would prefer, some people, Betty White said, I prefer to be able to be with my dog. But there's so much need of just normal people in some ways. Mm-hmm. But what he said, which was very helpful, and so now I love dogs a lot more, is he said that what it does, what dogs do, is allow a person to do what they want to do with a human being. And for whatever reason, they can't. But they are able, as you used the word about fish and birds, they're able to express it.
Right.
So that's what's really valuable, I think, in that way. So I don't know if that's in a sort of parallel with how these people with disabilities and can't, in a certain way, they don't contribute to like other people do. They contribute maybe in a more special way, sort of like this, these animals do, or something that brings out something that, you know, we have a tendency to be kind of hardened to, to that aspect of ourselves. So that's what I was kind of curious about.
So Todd, what I'll say about that is all life is precious. Shall I say it again? All life is precious. That's the meaning. They may not talk the way we do. Some people can't walk the way we do, can't think the way we do, can't brush their teeth the way we do. You know, it's but it's a precious life. It's worth caring for because there is a person in there. Their bodies just can't do it. And maybe their brains just can't do it. But they're in there. When I train my staff, I tell them, no matter what the disability is, we must keep in our minds the very possible, the possibility that they understand every single thing we're talking about and every single thing that's going on. That's the mindset when we're providing care, when we're providing training, you know, to do things and for to help them care for themselves. I hope that helps. Yes, Ross.
So your last talk, you were talking about Anthony DeMello. I went in and watched a couple of videos, and he was talking about creation and the praise of creation. And it was like, since I was raised Christian, I never had quite understood creation, you know, the praise, like why are we praising God, you know,
right.
It seems sort of silly.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow it's after watching those him talk, it suddenly was like, you know, somebody like Joko talks about how we need to, you know, just keep practicing being present to reality and pay attention, and suddenly it was like the two clicked.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I was just curious how you kind of look at that. I mean, you were kind of closing that previous talk with life is precious, but I don't know. Do you see any connections between sort of the Buddhist and that Christian sort of praise?
I do. You know, lately I have been looking at my Anthony DeMello books. For those of you who weren't at my last talk, he's a Jesuit priest who wrote a few books and some poetry, and talks about awareness. And I just read this morning, Ross, from him that life force is everywhere, such is God. I know in Buddhism, I don't think we really talk about God that much, but there it is. I just said it. You know, there's You know, it's interesting. When I was putting together this talk, guess when I put it together? Last night. Early this morning. I could not come up with anything to talk about. Except, so I called my teacher. I called one of my teachers, Angie. And I told her about my dilemma. And she just said, just tell your truth. And ask your questions. Answer your questions. That'll be a fine Dharma talk. So here I am sharing that I was so burnt out at work. And it comes out in a Dharma talk. It comes out in a talk. Chuck.
Did you have any COVID breakouts in any of your homes?
Absolutely, we did.
Oh, that's really stressful.
Yeah. So the first breakout we had was in one of the homes where the people, there were five residents who were medically fragile, and half my staff got sick. Now, we run a 24-hour operation, and we have between two and three staff on each shift. On each shift, because we have people that are medically fragile, we have to have a licensed staff on each shift. We were so short. I had to get everybody involved to try to, it wasn't just my home. Our company runs 46 homes in the state of California. It wasn't just my home. So yeah, it was really rough, you know, and then some of my residents got COVID, some with mild symptoms. And of course, this is before the vaccine, right? The first year. And so it was rough. It was really rough getting so over Thanksgiving 2020, I had to stay at work for 36 hours. I could not go to Thanksgiving. Well, we weren't having Thanksgiving anyway, my family. There would have been too many people in the house. And, you know, the mandate was no more than, what was it? Seven or eight people in a room. So we just canceled Thanksgiving. And I ended up working like 36 hours straight. And, you know, made it through. It was fine, but it was rough. It was rough. We, you know, we're held under such high standards. These homes that my company runs, these homes and homes like it, with this level of care that we provide, it's really quite regulated. Lots of regulations. And we were, during COVID time, if somebody had COVID, I got at least three calls a day, and sometimes from different agencies saying, what about this and that, and going down their list. And I had to do this every morning and every evening. 7 days a week. It's a lot of work being in charge. It was a lot of work, and it was a lot of work for my staff. I really have such high esteem and respect for my staff. You know, they were troopers, and they were there for our residents, giving the best care they could. So yeah. It was hard, Chuck. Yes, Jackie.
Thank you for your talk. It in a strange way parallels what I've just been feeling, because I am a caregiver in an unregulated home with one person who is my husband.
Yes.
And he has had cancer for 10 years. And he's already beyond his sell by date or whatever used by he's quite with the predictions. But
wow.
Things get pretty rocky. One of the side effects of multiple myeloma, which is not controlled, is too much calcium in the blood. And too much calcium in the blood makes you confused and slow and sleepy and unsteady on your feet. So these things have really stepped up. I've had to step up my game lately. And so I have a mini version of what you went through in a sense, because night before last, I was up a lot of the night feeling really burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm here at home and not there because I can't leave him.
Right.
Right. And I live far outside of town, and finding someone that would be okay for him. I mean, I'm working on it. I'm working on it, getting a little, taking care of myself, getting a little caregiver relief. And so that's good. But night before last, I was just in the toilet. So I can really relate to what you were saying. And then yesterday, I didn't do that much. I gave myself permission. Okay, I'm not going to write today. I'm also trying to write a children's novel. No ideas. I have nothing going on in my head. Mm-hmm. So I gave myself the day off from that. And I set myself a couple small tasks that we could accomplish. And we could drive out and listen to our book, do this task. And, you know, just a few things like that. Be in the garden, but not really working hard, you know. And this morning, I woke up. I was so full of ideas for my book. It was great. And I made my husband breakfast cheerfully. And
yes.
We joked together. And, you know, and I don't really know what mechanism happens that you can just flip.
Yes.
It's like a state of grace, to use a Christian term. And I'm also not raised in any religion, but come to this one late in life, I guess. And so that would be, if I could speak to anyone who is at the zero, at the nadir, at the dark night point, it is, you know, just wait a wee while.
That's all.
Probably things are going to just flip. And who knows what goes on inside of our being that makes that possible. Doing some self-care helps, but it doesn't always help. But somehow that worked for me. And so then here you show up with your talk, which just totally was fun and energizing for me also, because you had a similar return to your joy.
Yes.
So I thank you for that.
Thank you for sharing, Jackie. I'm so glad the switch flipped for you as well.
Thank you.
I don't know. There's online, there's a virtual hand.
Oh, hi, Ben. Shishin.
Hello.
Hello.
So I was just thinking about why I don't like the term caregiver. And it's because to me it implies that I'm a caretaker, because I am a disabled person and require the assistance of others. So, and then I remember, I'm also a caregiver in the sense that I give my care to other people's. And I will do all I can without actually being able to get up and carry things from point A to point B or what have you. What was I gonna say? So, yeah, anyway. Oh, I remember. It reminded me of the story, the Buddha story about giving and receiving gifts. It's that the giver should be thankful. I really like that idea. Even though I don't think it always should be expected that the giver is thankful, but the giver should be in a spot where they feel that it's well received and they should be thankful in that sense. That it's being seen that they're being a caregiver. So, and that's what I feel that you're doing, that you're hopefully being seen as a caregiver. Anyway.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you for this talk.
You know, about a month ago, I took over these two homes, and they're fairly new residents for me. I've visited their homes before and met them before, but now I really get to work with them and see them every day and talk to them and have relationships with them. And that's what I love about what I do, is that I make new friends, and they, you know, there's one woman who, she says no all the time. She does not want to leave her room. She lies in her bed with no pillow. Her head is against the bed, you know, the headboard. No pillow. She doesn't want one. And she says no almost all the time. Well, she finally was out of her room because she had to go to the restroom. And staff were helping her. And I came out and I just said, you know, because I say hi to her when I come in. And then when I leave work, you know, I say goodbye to her. And every now and then in the middle, I try to say, you know, just start something with her, just start to say hi. But she was out of her room, and we thought she was going to take a bath, a shower. We were excited because, you know, she doesn't always say, yeah, I want to take a shower. So I came out, and she held my hand like this. And I said, do you want me to give you a shower? And she said yes. And so we went in and we started to get ready for the shower. And then she goes, no. But after that interchange, and then, you know, we said, okay, if you don't want to take a bath, we'll take one later. You know, take your time. And, you know, do you want to go back to bed? She says yes. So she goes back to her room. And she doesn't say no to me very much anymore. In fact, she kind of, like, just, you know, she might just say nothing, which is really an accomplishment. Because I don't think she makes friends very easily. And I think people might be put off. Not me. I don't give up. So, you know, it just makes me happy to make new friends and make new connections. It's just, you know, it's just a passion that I have for what I do. And I hope we all have something that we're passionate about like this that brings you joy. I heard the lunch bell, everyone on Zoom. So I want to thank you all on Zoom land for your attention and here in the Zendo for your attention. Thank you so much for being here. Like I said in my last talk, I don't care if you get anything from what I said. I leave you free to be yourself, to think your thoughts, indulge your tastes, follow your inclinations, and behave in any way you decide is to your liking.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.